Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name's Michelle Cushat. I'm your co-host today, and joining me in today's conversation is my good friend, Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Hear you. If you've ever been in a service-oriented business, and you and I, Michael, I consider both of us in a service-oriented business.
Yeah, I do too.
We have likely dealt with the quote unquote high maintenance clients.
Yes.
We've had one or two here and there. This is a person who has what I would say are unreasonable expectation. And in many cases, this person is demanding, unrelenting, and never satisfied, regardless of how hard you work to meet their expectations. And I feel like I'm sounding kind of harsh, but if you've ever had that kind of person, you know exactly what I'm saying, right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I had a client like this. I've had several through the years, but I had one in particular that I'm thinking of right now that was really high maintenance. And by that, I mean someone, as you said, who had unreasonable expectations of my company and me. And some people that are listening to this know what I'm talking about. But unfortunately, I didn't see that on the front end. Mm-hmm. I was too focused on the opportunity. Well, within the first 30 days, it became obvious we had a problem. And I can remember it like it was yesterday, exactly where we were. We were sitting in a restaurant. I sat down with the client and a few of the staff members there to review where we were. And I had worked hard, more than the size of the account really warranted it, because I was committed to super pleasing this client. And I was confident that I had hit it out of the park. I just knew he was going to be thrilled. Well, not so much. In fact, I would say he was very unhappy. Not only did he not praise me for what I had accomplished, he didn't even acknowledge it. He focused exclusively on what I hadn't done. And man, talk about, you know, the glass is half empty kind of mentality. I was stunned. I mean, it's hard to catch me by surprise, but I was stunned. Well, not surprisingly, the client fired me a few months later, and it was very painful. But as difficult as that experience was, it did have some positive outcomes, starting with me beginning to understand the need to clarify expectations at the front end. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But here's where it got interesting, because that's not the end of the story. A few years later, that same client came back to me and practically begged me to take him back. Well, unfortunately, I'm not proud of it, but I did.
Oh, no.
I know. I naively thought that the second time around would be different, right? You know, I said, Look, he's changed. I can't freeze frame him. And I've changed. You know, I'm a better manager than I was then. And I kind of had something to prove. Like I wanted to, you know, redeem myself in the situation. Well, the truth is that I was wrong on both counts. The client had not changed. He was still the unreasonable, demanding tyrant that he'd always been. And he could still turn on the charm, like when he needed me or when he was trying to sell me. But fundamentally, he was a narcissist, and nothing I could do would ever change that or would ever change him. But here's the other thing. I hadn't changed that much either. I mean, I'm pretty good at creativity and execution, but I'm not superhuman. And I couldn't suddenly acquire superhuman powers. There was no way that I would ever satisfy his expectations. And so that one ended as well. The second time, though, I ended up parting company with him because it just wasn't working, and I was tired of being miserable.
You know, I find myself doing, I find myself kind of endeavoring on this this attempt to convert the person, right?
So yes.
I think if I just work hard enough, if I smile enough, if I'm kind enough, if I put in enough hours, I'll be able to convert the other person to being my raving fan. And so I put all this pressure on me, but do you still kind of take the same approach, or have you found a new way to be able to deal with those kind of clients?
Well, yeah, I've got a way, a matrix that I want to share just in just a minute, but I want to share three conclusions I came out of that experience with.
Okay.
Kind of conclusions about high maintenance clients. And okay. It's this. Number one, some people are just high maintenance. You know, they operate, to use a John Eldridge term, out of their woundedness. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so I'm never going to please them. I'll only deplete myself trying, wearing out myself, wearing out my staff, and I'm not going to be able to move the ball that much down the field. And it's hard for me to accept. Like you, I'm like the eternal optimist. I want to believe people can change, but here's the truth. I'm not in the business to change them. I may want to pursue this on the side as a hobby maybe or as a ministry, but that's a different thing than trying to change them inside the domain of my business. Nothing good is going to happen, probably for them and probably for me, if I try to do that. So that's number one.
All right.
Some people are just high maintenance.
We probably need to have everybody say that out loud together.
I know, yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, number two, this is really important. High maintenance people are a distraction. They suck up more than their fair share of resources. And in fact, if you let them, they'll suck up everything you and your team have to offer. They're just a bottomless pit. And I could end up spending all my time, you could end up spending all your time trying to please these people rather than on delivering the results your business needs to survive and thrive. So that's like conclusion number two. Third conclusion, and this is perhaps the most important, high maintenance people keep you from serving others. You know, to me, this is the important one because I'm better off to say no and spend the time searching for low maintenance clients or at least reasonable ones. It's really not fair to my other clients or my teammates to keep these me monsters around. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to sound unkind, but there are just some people you're not called to serve. You can spend all your time caught up in the drama of their demands, their accusations, or you can move on. And the sooner you cut the cord and fire them, the more productive and happy you're going to be. So those are just some conclusions that I think are important about high maintenance clients.
We're going to dive deeper into this topic. But before we do that, I have within me this natural resistance to what you just said. And maybe it comes from my faith or my history, whatever. But there's this, it probably comes from my faith background where we kind of feel like that we need to serve the least of these, right? So that high maintenance, demanding client, that we need to somehow be a doormat for them, serve them somehow. And so how do we find, I know you feel the same too, that servant-heartedness is a good thing. So how do we find the balance or the right place of negotiation between serving people in their imperfection and setting good, healthy boundaries?
Yeah, it's challenging. I think that one of the things to realize is that, you know, we haven't been called to be their savior.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that and, just changed so the whole game right there.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get sort of a messianic complex about this and think that we can change people that don't want to change, and we end up wanting it worse than they want it. Mm-hmm. And I think we get what we tolerate. Let me say that again. We get what we tolerate. And if we're not careful, we're training people all the time on how to treat us, what they can get away with. And so that if we allow them to yell at our team members, for example, or to insist that we answer their phone calls after hours or on the weekends, or that we put aside our other client work so that we can focus on them, that's just not healthy. Mm-hmm. It's not reasonable. I mean, they have an inflated view of their own work, their own self. And I just want to say, you know what? You need to change. There's certain people I'm called to serve, and you're not one of them. Now, if you do, you know, if I would have to have the sound of many waters coming out of a fireball in my bedroom at 3 a.m. to do this, but maybe for other people, they feel called to serve these people. I say, knock yourself out. You know, maybe you can do it. Maybe you're the kind of person that can be prophetic and really speak to these people, and that you'll see a change. But in my experience, it takes a lot more than my counsel for people to change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's so interesting because I just had a situation with a woman who contacted me and asked for advice. But she had a client who was very, very demanding, and she kind of tolerated it and dealt with it until she went on vacation. And this woman demanded that she come in on her vacation. She did kind of a staycation where she stayed home. And this woman was texting her all hours of the day and demanding that she came into work. And then when she didn't come in, this woman went into the place of employment, into the office, and just started verbally bad-mouthing her behind her back, you know, when she wasn't there. And it went on and on and on. And she came to me and said, but, you know, shouldn't I serve her? Shouldn't I take care of her? Isn't that what customer service is all about? And so, again, I come back to what you just said a minute ago. You know, it's not her job to save her. At this point, this woman is using bad behavior to get control and power.
Yes, exactly. And when you reward that, it doesn't help anyone. And I think sometimes the best thing you could do, and I've done this probably 3 or 4 times in my career, where I've literally fired the client. When I was in the publishing business, there were authors, I could tell you stories, but were super demanding on my staff. And not just demanding, but aggressive and abusive.
Mm.
And I remember calling one author up and just saying, look, you're going to send flowers to this graphic designer that you insulted, and you're going to apologize. And if you don't do that, then I'm not going to sign this contract, because we hadn't yet signed the contract. Uh-huh. And he did it. But unfortunately, I kind of coerced it because I had the contract hanging over his head. And he quickly reverted to his old behavior. And I finally just had to call him up and say, look, we're not publishing your book. This relationship's over. This is the last conversation you'll ever have with me. Now get this. I called his agent, and now all of a sudden I'm feeling a little badly because I like the agent, but I just didn't like his client. And I said, look, I have something to confess. I just terminated our publishing relationship with your client. And he listened to me. He was very patient. He didn't interrupt me. And he said, you know what? I need to do the exact same thing. I can't stand this guy. And he called up and fired him as his agent. So these people, for whatever reason, you know, this is like a pattern.
Yes.
And the worst thing you can do is reward that pattern. They'll never change. And in fact, they'll go from you to somebody else. If they think it works with you, they'll abuse everybody in their life. And I just say, no, no, sir.
You make a good point just now saying it's a pattern. We're not talking about the individual that has a bad day and behaves poorly.
Yeah,
because we've all had those days. It's the person that repeatedly, again and again and again,
that's right,
uses their bad behavior to try to get what they want. And as business owners, entrepreneurs, business owners, we don't have to reward that kind of behavior. But I also think it's important about how we lead, right? The influence, how we respond to that also impacts how we influence others. So why don't you make this practical for us? Because it's one thing to say to fire a client. It's another thing to actually do it. So show us how.
Yeah. Well, the key thing is that you don't want to get into relationships with these kind of people to begin with.
Okay.
Right? Because it's much more difficult to extricate yourself from a relationship that's bad than to just keep from getting in one. So several years ago, I developed something that I called a strategic relationship matrix. And we'll have this diagram in the show notes so you can see it, but I'm going to describe it. But it's a graphic model, and it's a simple 2x2 matrix, similar for some of the people that are listening to this. They'll know what the Boston Consulting Group matrix is, but it has a horizontal axis representing maintenance and a vertical axis representing profitability. So again, I'm going to have this model in the show notes, and it's complete with some little cartoon characters. So there's four boxes that are represented by this 2x2 matrix. So one is high profit, low maintenance. The second one is low profit, low maintenance. The third one is high profit, high maintenance. And the fourth one is low profit, high maintenance. Now, don't worry about memorizing these. Again, you can see this in the diagram, and it'll make a whole lot more sense when I talk about each of these in turn. But every relationship is somewhere on the continuum of profitability.
Mm-hmm.
It may be highly profitable, marginally profitable, or completely unprofitable. Maybe you're losing money in the relationship. And every professional relationship also requires a certain amount of maintenance or investment to service it. For example, some relationships may be really high maintenance. That's what we're talking about. They require a high investment of time and energy and money. Some, though, are low maintenance or something in between. But this framework describes just about every kind of professional relationship you can have. So let me just go through each one of these, because it's critically important that you understand this. And if you do, it will forever change the way you think about business relationships. And by the way, not just clients, but vendors, team members, everybody that you work with. So for me, priority number one, this is what I want to acquire, whether it's a vendor or a client or employee. I want a high profit, low maintenance relationship. These are the kind of relationships that don't require a lot of energy to service, yet they yield really big profits. They're highly profitable. These kinds of relationships are usually delightful. Everyone's happy. The secret to success in business is to develop more of these kinds of relationships. They're the cash cows.
Mm-hmm.
That's why if you look at the diagram, there's an illustration of a cow in that particular quadrant. Okay?
Okay.
Clear on that one?
Got it.
Okay. Priority number two, this is where it starts getting interesting, low profit, low maintenance relationships. Well, why would you put that as priority number two? Well, here's why. These are the ones that have at least half the equation right. Mm-hmm. They're low maintenance. Your hope is that with a little work, you can also make them highly profitable. They're the bright and shining stars. The star is the metaphor or the illustration that's in this quadrant, as you'll see when you look at the diagram. So in terms of how you allocate resources, these, I believe, should be your second priority, the ones that are the stars, low profit, low maintenance. Then we get to priority number three.
Which gets high a profit. Little bit more complicated.
This gets complicated. High profit, high maintenance relationships. These, Michelle, are probably the most frustrating because they seem too profitable to exit, but they require so much maintenance, you're often left wondering whether it's worth the effort. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they're a perpetual question mark. And that's the icon I've used in this quadrant. The key is to try to force these relationships into the priority one quadrant. And if you can't do this, then you need to bite the bullet and exit the relationship. The time spent servicing these kinds of relationships is time you can invest in finding more priority one relationships or helping priority two relationships go into quadrant number one. So again, these are the ones that are the high profit, high maintenance ones. I'll never forget having an employee that was actually in this quadrant. He ran one of the most profitable divisions we had at Thomas Nelson, but he was also a pain in the you-know-where. Yeah. And he was just super high maintenance. I mean, I was constantly, somebody from HR would call me and said, you're never going to believe what he did this time. And so I just got tired of running interference for him. I had a talk with him. You know, we tried to remediate the situation. We were very patient. But at the end of the day, we said, you know what? This isn't working. And all this time I'm spending on trying to manage your business, even though it's highly profitable, but managing all the shenanigans and the stuff that's happening around you is time I'm not spent working with other divisions and helping the priority two and priority one employees.
And there's a real cost to that. I mean, we think about how much they're making, the high profit people, but we sometimes neglect to take into the account the significant costs that they are exacting on us, even if they're making a high profit.
Well, and you think about just the mental energy. Mm-hmm. You know, you only have so much creative energy. And when you're spending it all on the problem child, then you're ignoring the people that you really need to be spending it on. And that's exactly what I was doing. And finally, I just had to end it.
I had somebody recently, another person who contacted me about a similar situation, and it was a high profit, high maintenance client. And so I had to sit down with her and literally walk through, what is this really costing you in terms of health, in terms of man hours, in terms of your satisfaction with life and everything else? And eventually she made the decision to let that client go. But it's hard when that profit piece is playing such a big, such a big player in the equation.
It absolutely is. And if we're not careful, we can fall into kind of a scarcity mindset where we think, oh my gosh, I got to hold on to this no matter what it's costing me because there may not be anything else to replace it. And I think sometimes it just takes an act of faith to let go and just trust that there are other clients, there's more priority one clients out there or priority two clients that you can give your attention to. But that leads us to priority number four, which is the low profit, high maintenance relationships. These are the dogs, and that's the icon I've used in this quadrant. But they're dogs, at least in terms that are value to your organization. They're a huge waste of resources. They wear out your staff. Mm-hmm. They wear you out. They have little or no potential. So the sooner you come to grips with reality, the better. Getting rid of these kinds of relationships will allow you to reclaim the resources so you can invest in finding or serving priority one relationships. And that's really how you move the needle in your business and create a highly profitable business where the people on your team actually have a life.
All right. Just to recap those four priorities and that matrix, we have priority one, which is high profit, low maintenance. This is what we're aiming for. This is the cash cow, as you said. Priority two, low profit, low maintenance. These are our shining stars who have the potential for developing more profit, but they at least have one half of the equation figured out. Priority three, high profit, high maintenance. These are, as you said, the most frustrating clients in many ways. And then priority four, low profit, high maintenance. And those are dogs, which are just basically a waste of your resources.
So the thing that the matrix does, the strategic relationship matrix, is it helps us identify the target. This is what we're going at after. We want high profit, low maintenance clients. And the way we do that is we hire slow and we fire fast. I mean, that's kind of the general umbrella that we're going to use here. But the first thing that we need to do is discuss expectations. You know, sometimes in our zeal to sign this client up, we don't really listen like we should and find out what it is that they're expecting us to do. Mm-hmm. So I literally write these expectations down. I ask the questions and then I repeat them to the prospective client so that they know and I know what we're both expecting out of this relationship. What are their expectations? You know, what's their expectation for responsiveness? You know, I want them to know I don't work weekends, neither do my people, mm-hmm. you know, unless it's a complete emergency. I'm talking about, you know, their office building is burning down. Unless it's a complete emergency, don't text me on the weekends. Uh-huh. I will not respond. I don't like to get texts at night unless it's an emergency. You know, if I was consulting with ER doctors, or I was consulting maybe with customer service people that were solving major problems in mm-hmm. real time, I may not have those rules. But nobody that I serve, and probably nobody that the vast majority of the people who are listening to this serve, are ER doctors or customer service people. And so there's not that much that's really an emergency. So again, just write down the expectations so you're both clear of what to expect of the other so there are no surprises.
So you're really talking about, as far as discussing these expectations, this is what we do with a prospective client. That helps us vet yes. the high maintenance one before we get them. What if we have a high maintenance client? Is it too late for us to go back and reiterate the expectations in the effort to try to rehabilitate them?
No, absolutely not. I think it's just to call it what it is, to be able to have a conversation with the client, say, you know, I think some of the struggle that we're having here is that we have a misalignment of expectations. Okay. I'm not making you wrong or me wrong, but we need to describe our expectations and see if we can get these in alignment. And if we can't, you know, maybe it's better for us to part company, but let's have the conversation.
All right. Sounds good. So that first step to vetting high maintenance clients is to discuss expectations, to write them down or repeat them to a prospective client. What is the next step?
Yeah, you're going to resonate with this one. But step number two is recognize the warning signs. For example, when it comes to my speaking, I get nervous when someone manifests one or all of these signs or symptoms. For example, they're continually trying to negotiate down on my mm-hmm. speaking fee. Or they're attempting, and I hate this one with a passion, and it's a huge red flag to me. They're attempting to add additional speaking sessions we didn't initially quote. Or they want me to do a meet and greet that we didn't discuss, but they're just trying to add on all this stuff uh-huh. for me to do. I don't mind that if it's on the front end, mm-hmm. but when they're trying to add that on the back end, or they're trying to cut corners on expenses, or they're failing to follow through on initial communication, you know, I'm having to chase them to get the basic information I need to serve them. So if those warning signs are there, and they, you know, are going to be different for everybody, mm-hmm. but if those warning signs are there, that should be a red flag. That should be the time when you say, you know, I don't think this is a fit. I don't know if this is the right kind of client for me and for my organization.
You know, that's a great way to say it too, as far as it's not a great fit. And to come back and say, this is not going to meet your needs or my needs in the right way. So it's just a misfit, and that's okay.
That's right. Exactly right.
All right. So recognize the warning signs. What is the third step?
Third step is assess your capabilities. You know, make sure you can deliver on what they're asking. Just because they ask, just because it looks like an opportunity, doesn't mean you're the best fit for it. A lot of times when it forces us or causes us to veer off course and to get into a business we don't understand or don't have the experience or the capabilities to perform, we can spend an enormous amount of time on a learning curve and suck all the profit right out of the relationship. For example, if somebody asked me to manage a software project, mm-hmm. you know, I've done that in the past, occasionally, not very many. I could probably do that, but there'd be a learning curve mm-hmm. that would be expensive to my company and it would suck all the profit out of the relationship. So assess your capabilities and find out if you can really do what they're asking. I remember a few years ago, I had a very well-known client that had me do a consulting session with him, and I did. And I felt like I went with Megan, my oldest daughter, and I felt like we added real value in that session. Well, he said, and he was very convincing and really twisted our arm, said, I need you to be in my office twice a month and consult with us. And he didn't seem to balk at the price. He was willing to do that. But when Megan and I got back from that meeting, we looked at each other and we said, we don't have the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's just a resource that we don't have available. And even though it looked like fun, I really believed we could add value. That was not something that we were called to do, nor do we have the capability or the resources to really do it. And as difficult as it was, we said no. Now, we directed him to some other resources, some people that we thought could serve him, but we had, thankfully, and it helps if you have somebody on the same page with you, had the guts to say no.
You know, this really comes back to the fact that we have to be so well-grounded in our own sense of identity and purpose and capability that ends up driving our decisions rather than the urgency or the temptation of the moment.
Comes down to courage, really. You know, the ability to do something you know you need to do, even though you may be afraid or may feel uncomfortable, but just for the sake of your business, for the sake of these other values that drive you, you've got to do that.
All right. So the third step here is to assess your capabilities. What's step number four?
Yeah. Step number four, and this is the last one, is to check references. Man, I can't emphasize this enough. It's important when you're hiring people, but it's also important when you're taking on new clients or new customers. Check references. See what other vendors, other suppliers, other service providers say. It's probably not going to be that different for you. And if you think that you're the exception, you know, that somehow you can serve them when other people have failed or you can have a good experience. And what happens is sometimes that prospective client is bad-mouthing other people. And I think to myself, you know, I know my competitors. They're not idiots. I'm probably not that much smarter than they are. So if this person is not being satisfied with the others that he's tried, I'm probably not going to have a very good chance either. So to be honest with that and check the reference and don't be afraid to walk away if it's not a fit. This is the thing that's killed me in the past is when I slip into this kind of scarcity mentality, as I said before, and I think I've got to have this business. I've got to sign up this client. I'm telling you, I've never gone against my gut in a situation like that and felt good about it. I've always regretted it.
You know, it's interesting because when we first start our businesses, right, we kind of feel like we have to say yes to everything that comes our way because we're just getting started. But at some point, we need to be so secure in who we are and what we're about and what we have to offer that impacts our decisions more than that scarcity mindset. So such great advice.
Yeah, and it's something we have to grow into too. And I suppose we have to make some mistakes, but these can be some of the most costly mistakes we'll make. And it really says the wrong thing to our team. This is why my number one priority always is my team above my clients. If I take care of the people that are taking care of me, my team, they'll take care of the customers. And ultimately, the customers will make it possible for the business to exist. But if you get that reversed and you start taking care of your customers at the expense of your team, people will leave you. They'll be discouraged. They'll be cynical. And it won't be a positive experience for anybody, including your customers.
Such a great reminder that our team is our first client before anybody else. All right. Once again, the steps to vet high maintenance clients that Michael's just given us include: number one, discuss expectations ahead of time, write them down, repeat them to the prospective client. Number two, recognize the warning signs. This is so important. You know, start to keep track and look for those warning signs for a potentially high maintenance client. Number three, assess your capabilities. Make sure you can deliver on what they're asking. Be true to yourself and what you have to offer. And then number four, check references. See what other vendors, suppliers, or service providers are saying. And don't be afraid to walk away if it's not a good fit. There's just far too much at stake.
Yep.
Well, if you've enjoyed today's episode, you can get the show notes and a full transcript at michaelhyatt.com. Before you go, however, do us a favor, head over to iTunes and rate this program. It's a great way to keep the show visible so others can discover it. Do you have any final thoughts for us today, Michael?
Yeah, if you want to attract high quality clients, the best thing you can do is focus on these priority one clients and super serve them because they talk. And always the best business I've ever received in my life has been from referrals. And, you know, you can try to do a lot of marketing and do all that stuff. And I certainly believe in that and do it. But super serving your best customers and let them be a referral source for you is the best way to do that. And these high maintenance clients keep you from doing that very thing.
Great advice. Thank you, Michael. And thank you for joining us today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life is a gift. Now go make it count.